No offense to you all, but I could listen to that all morning. I'll listen to you, but that's pretty good stuff. It's Soweto and the Soweto Gospel Choir, Songs of the Free. That's in honor of Nelson Mandela's 100th birthday at Troy Savings Bank Music Hall. It's happening on the 6th, which I believe is Thursday night, at 7:30. And you can find out more at troymusichall.org. And we'll be hearing from the Soweto Gospel Choir throughout the morning this morning, which will be a lot of fun, and we look forward to that. All right. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this fourth day of December. A lot of juicy issues to discuss. We'll dive right in here in a moment. Let me introduce everybody. She lived through yesterday, so she's back today. Libby Most is here. Good morning, Libby.
Good morning, dear.
Our political consultant. Good morning, and nice to have you here.
Thank you. Lovely to be here.
J.P. Miller is with us. And when I say she lived through yesterday, yesterday was her first day back after knee surgery, and so we're very happy that she's back with us. I don't want people to think that yesterday was so bad that you lived through it. J.P. Miller is with us. He is from the Empire Report. He is the Empire Report, and we are thrilled to have you with us this morning. Thank you.
Good morning. Nice thrilled to be here.
Each and every Tuesday. Mike Spain is our good friend. He is associate editor of the Times Union, and it is always a good day when Mike is here.
Good morning. Thank you. Happy to be here.
Wonderful to have you here. Alan Chartok joins us. Good morning, Alan. How are you, sir?
I'd say he's rather low-key today, Joe.
I'm fine.
Well, good. Excellent. These are just like the moments where we just check in with everybody, make sure everybody's all right.
Well,
they're ready to take on the day.
Well, this lady called, and she said a while back that when I got on, I would sound like Eeyore, you know.
Okay, you don't have to every day.
So I've been trying to live up to that.
Yeah, it's not hard.
For me, you mean?
Yeah.
So good to hear your voice.
And away we go. All right. So here we are. We'll start off by talking about the big story that is on, which really is, this happens a lot, it seems to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, folks, this seems to happen quite a bit in this administration, where something happens and then nobody's really sure what happened. And there's a lot of uncertainty around it. So the White House agreements on trade with China and North America and this aggressive trade strategy from the president, that accelerated on two fronts Monday, with the White House pressing China to quickly follow through on commitments made over the weekend, while simultaneously clashing with lawmakers over a fragile North America pact. On Monday, White House National Economic Council Director Larry Kudlow said that Trump was expecting immediate concessions from China as part of a broad package of changes both countries agreed to pursue during the Group of 20 summit in Argentina. At the same time, Trump's updated North America trade proposal was encountering a rough reception on Capitol Hill, where both parties have deep divisions over trade that will be on full display as a newly Democratic-controlled House takes up the pact along with the Republican-led Senate. Both discussions, driven largely by Trump and U.S. Representative Robert Lighthizer, are at the center of the White House's agenda and could have profound implications for the global economy if negotiations collapse. At the same time, they're also fraught with confusion and ambiguity, complicating urgent timeliness set by Trump. The White House's description of its agreement with China changed Monday, and a prominent lawmaker predicted that Congress would block the North America deal. Why is there so much uncertainty?
Where's that from, Joe? The New York Times?
That is from the, as I said, the Washington Post.
The Washington Post, sorry.
Well, I it is not unusual. But in fairness, trade deals are very, very, very complicated. And when you have a sort of, I think what President Trump reached with President Xi of China was an agreement to come up with an agreement and some kind of a let's just kind of cool things down while we try to work things out. And now the White House is portraying it very favorably for the U.S. China isn't really describing it that way, but the devil is in the details that will be worked out over the next 105 days, I think is what it said has to be the process. So these are just agreements to talk some more and agree. They're not really agreements. And people are happy, in fairness. People are, a lot of people have complained that the U.S. hasn't been aggressive with China. So like him or not, some people are pleased that we're at least engaging China and keeping their fingers crossed that we won't come out worse off for it.
Well, it's all according to how many farmers go bankrupt in the middle of the country. I mean, you know, people wanted him to be aggressive, and he unilaterally did these tariffs, and it's destroyed a lot of the farming, the small farms in the Midwest. And, you know, look at, the car companies are closing down. I mean,
Well, you know, this hasn't all happened.
But the financial constraints have happened. You know, closing down auto plants have happened. Bankruptcies in the farmland have happened.
Well,
and how is that all going to come back magically? I don't think so.
I don't think the bankruptcies have all happened. And the plants, yes, GM has announced it's closing plants to retool, and they're talking about building electric cars, possibly some of it in China, some of the components in China. So it's all up in the air. But this I'm not defending it. I'm just saying that trade deals are extremely complicated, and I guess President Trump is learning it the hard way. He's been there 2 years now, and it is a very, very difficult thing to pull off. And we thought we had a North America trade agreement. And now it doesn't look like that's all ironed out. And then with the Democrats coming, I mean, I understand what I'm saying. It's these are very, very thorny, difficult things. And to portray them as some simple deal where we shake hands and they're going to give us everything we want because we were playing hardball is probably a mischaracterization of it.
And well, but that's how he characterized it.
Well, first of all, I do want to apologize for behavior of my telephone. Not me, not turning it off. Yeah,
that's an old telephone. Black dial telephone. Yeah. I don't know why you still carry that around with you.
Does that fit in your pocket?
That's the second thing. Yeah, it's long and involved. But here's the thing. Trump is a liar. That's the terrible part about what he does and says. He just lies and lies and lies and lies. So at this point of the game, nobody can believe a thing he says. Not only that, but the people in his own administration contradict what he says. And we do know that he's impulsive. So what happens is there's some external stimuli that he looks at, and there is a... he's looking at his polls, and he knows that the country is in deep trouble as a result of his trade policy, which was not well thought out. He can, I think Mike is exactly right to raise the fact that there are people who think China's been getting away with murder for a long time, and they have. We know that. Nevertheless, this has to be done with a word that Trump doesn't understand, which is diplomacy. He doesn't get that at all. He doesn't understand how you do it. And as a result, he's a bully, he's a liar, and he has left the trade policies of this country in chaos. And you watch the rock and roll of the stock market as it goes one day down, based on the thought that things are going to be really bad in terms of our trade policy. And some days it's going to be good because it looks like at least for the next, Mike says 105, I read 90 days. There's going to be at least 90 days more without more chaos.
Well, and this is Donald Trump's number one issue. This is the number one issue he ran on when he ran for president. He didn't run on, I'm going to lower your taxes. He ran on, I am going to call out China. I'm going to renegotiate trade deals with them, with Mexico, with Canada. And that's how he generated such excitement from the blue-collar Democrats in swing states. He wants to get this right. He wants to be very tough on China. And I thought it was unbelievable to see Chuck Schumer and Ron Wyden and the Senate Democrats saying, Trump, you cannot back down on China. You have to be aggressive. So the senators in the United States, the Democratic senators, are the ones that are really backing Trump on this, and the Republicans are more free trade. They want him to go lightly on China.
Hmm.
Yeah, I think the Democrats are also making a big stink about the trade agreement with our neighbors to the north and south, you know, Mexico and Canada, because it they don't want to see any jobs be going, any plants closing in the U.S. and jobs going to Mexico, let's say, where the minimum wage is far lower. And that seems like that's something that appeal. It was kind of old-fashioned Democrats. You know, Democrats are fighting with protectionist ideas so that they don't lose jobs to other countries, and that sounded like the old Democrats, and Trump and the Democrats seem to be in alignment here, which is extremely unusual to me.
Hmm. Yeah, you know, one hopes that the Democrats are doing what they're doing because they truly believe in it, as opposed to in order to position him and put him in an even worse place. I don't know that Schumer has been doing his best to get in Trump's face, and he has been given tremendous criticism by people in his own party for not being a true loyal opponent. And maybe this is just a chance to do that.
When you think about what is I guess I want to get back to the ambiguity for a second of when you have these meetings, and because this goes back to a conversation we were having yesterday, but when you have these meetings that take place at these summits, there are no aides present on a lot of them. There's conversations that take place in the hall. I mean,
we have no idea.
I mean, that's the problem. A lot of people just don't know what's going on, which doesn't seem to be, I mean, it may be the way to quote unquote get a deal done. I just don't know how you then try to make that concrete or to legislate it so that it's something that actually comes to fruition.
Well, I mean, one of the problems is that we live in a soundbite world now, and this president, more than any other, is a soundbite president. He wants to boil something down to a tweet, and it's more complicated than that. It's a whole lot more complicated than that. And that's where, diplomacy and knowledge and experience in negotiating trade deals is really, you know, that will make or break how the United States makes out in these. It's almost like tuning an engine with about 50 cylinders in it. You know, you touch one thing and it's going to set something else off, that kind of thing. And it's very, very complicated, and it's very, very tricky. And you can't boil it down to a tweet.
So in the end, we have to look at what's good for both Xi and the president. Each of them have constituencies that they have to prove themselves to. Things are not going particularly well in China right now. At least the rate of their growth isn't happening in the same way it was. It's still impressive by our standards, but it isn't what it was. And Xi, of course, is a man who wants to be a dictator in the old Maoist sense. He's moving everything around. So in order for us to have the kind of discussion we'd like to have here, we ought to be thinking about what is good for both men, because otherwise we're not going to – neither of them, I think, are particularly interested in what's good for the country.
And what Joe said on Trump making this more difficult is correct. His impulsiveness and his tweets, you know, there are very serious negotiations going on, and he can easily derail them based on his mood that day and what he tweets that day, which changes day by day, hour by hour, which makes these even more difficult than they would be with a normal president.
I agree with you and Joe, and so said.
All right. When you think about, so where do we go from here, do you think, over the next couple of hours, days, and weeks, especially when we kind of concede the month of December of not getting a whole lot done, right?
Well, they've already pushed the deal for the 2 weeks back for the funding for of the government, not to shut down the government. They agreed.
A temporary stay, right?
So who knows? Maybe the government will get shut down because of the border wall and everything else right before Christmas.
As you know, Libby, that's not going to happen.
I know. But, you know, the thing is that where do we go from here? We don't know because we have somebody in the White House who doesn't really know what they're doing, thinks his gut is smarter than every brain that could possibly be out there with experience and diplomacy. So, you know, I think that this is all smoke and mirrors. I think that we're not going to get anything from China. I think that this was just bluster on his part to make him look like he actually accomplished everything, because all the media out of the G20 made him look like a fool.
Well, one of the sound bites yesterday, or one of the headlines yesterday, was out of Wall Street, and the stock market went up a few hundred points.
Yeah,
it
yeah.
closed up higher. And to some people, even if they don't have personal investments, you know, they might mm-hmm. have some pension money there, some mm-hmm. savings, and that's only even half the country. When they hear that the stock market is up, they feel like things are good. And that, if nothing else, his announcement, however vague it was or however inaccurate it was over the weekend, it did affect the stock market. We'll have to watch it today right. now that all the major news agencies are focusing on the ambiguities of his
I think we have to remember that what I said before, that this is between these two people. This is Trump trying to apply his skill set from Trump Tower and real estate to international diplomacy. Let's face it, that's what's going on here.
It's funny to use the word skill set.
Or lack of it. It's a
was very effective manipulating the tax laws and of real estate.
Yeah,
but he's also a bully. The local plumbers, the local electricians. And that's right, and also
it makes
a bully.
Him richer.
And when he made his deals, that's what he thinks he can apply mm-hmm. here. And the only question is, can he?
Well,
it's very different.
That is the lingering question. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We welcome your letters. Panel@WAMC.org. Panel@WAMC. Hey, and if Trey doesn't get you to write a letter, I don't know what will. Panel@WAMC.org. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our program this morning. Listening to Soweto Gospel Choir and Songs of the Free, they are going to do this in honor of Nelson Mandela's 100th birthday at the Troy Savings Bank Music Hall on Thursday night at 7:30. You can find out more at troymusichall.org.
That's one worth going to.
It is. It's great stuff. Beautiful, beautiful music. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad we'll get to listen to it this morning. We have Libby Post, J.P. Miller, Mike Spain, and Alan Chartok, who has a fistful of letters. All right, maybe not a complete fistful, but a pretty good fistful. And we'll,
what Donald Trump would call a fistful of letters. Right.
More letters than anyone.
William says, misogynistic media.
There we go.
To Libby. This is to you, Libby.
Okay.
Gina Haslip began as a low-level interpreter who spent decades working her way up the ladder to become the first woman to head up the CIA. Why does the media dismiss her groundbreaking accomplishment, William? Do you want to go first?
No.
Well, I'd like to go and say, I don't think they have. You know, and in fact, I think just the opposite. She's the one that all the senators wanted to hear from because of her expertise and because of the people who admire her.
And
so I don't know why we say that she's being dismissed.
Right. She got told to shut up.
Yeah, and now, of course, because she finally achieved the one thing with these feckless Republicans that happened in the Senate, they got some iron in their gut, and they said, unless she comes, we're holding everything up here. And all of a sudden, there was a compromise reached, which was that she would show up, but only for a sort of executive session with some key senators.
Well, you know, and I think. Trump thought that he'd be able to control her too, and her I would assume her first allegiance would be to the agency and to the intelligence community. And so yes, the intelligence community will continue to put out information that Trump doesn't like Saudi Arabia killed the journalist. I can't remember his last name. I mean, I know Khashoggi? I can see it.
Khashoggi.
That they killed Khashoggi, and Trump doesn't want to hear it. But she's going to continue to do what's right because she believes in the intelligence community and she believes in what she's doing. And this is the one thing Trump just doesn't understand is that people have allegiances to their.
To their mission,
to their missions,
to their country,
right?
Libby.
To their country, to their missions, to what they do.
To what's
I don't
right.
know that I fully agree with you.
Okay.
I think there's a. I think it's complicated, to be honest with you. In other words, I think nobody wants to lose their job. Comey didn't want to lose his job. Now people are portraying Comey as a hero. Wait a second.
Yeah. Right.
This is the same Comey who
put Trump in office.
That's right. That's absolutely right. Yeah. So in this case, you know, she has to play it. She didn't say, oh, go before the microphones and say, the hell with you, Trump. I'm going up there because they want me.
Everybody in public office, the higher up you get, has to make those calculations that if I'm not here tomorrow, I'm not going to be able to do any good. But if I can bend a little bit or be a little more diplomatic in how I characterize something or maybe just keep my mouth shut about this, I'll be able to do a lot of good. And in the overall, the outcome will be much better than if I'm fired tomorrow. You know,
I don't know.
Everybody, you know, everybody has to figure out where that line is.
Yeah, but if somebody like Haspel gets fired tomorrow, she'll end up in the Brookings Institute. She'll end up at the Hoover
she'll
Institute.
Be fine, she'll be fine, but will the country be better? Is she making a decision that's good for her or making a decision that's good for the CIA and the United States?
Well, that's the question that they all have to, and they have to balance that out with whether or not they want to keep their job because we have.
I just don't think it's about
an
individual's money in their pocket or a job or their own ego. I think it's for the right public servant, it's about.
I agree with you, Mike. I think it's about integrity.
But there's something called false consciousness. Now, some people want to stay, and so what they do is they say, well, for the good of the country, I have to back off or I have to subsume mm-hmm. myself. And they really believe it. As I have often said, you put the lie detector cuff on their arm and you get a straight line. I'm doing this for the sake of the country when, in fact, they may be doing it for the sake of themselves. Don't you see?
No, I do. I think people will rationalize it. They'll say, I'm doing this for the good of the country, and it will also do me some good, too, you know, that kind of thing. Sure. And it's complicated.
All right.
Oh, I'm reading the letters.
You are.
Oh, thank you, though. Thank you, Joe. So that was from William, and we thank him for that. Called the media misogynistic. And Elias says, on tariffs, among other native tariff results is the fact that Trump had to raid the Treasury for $13 billion in direct subsidies to farmers who have been harmed by his decisions. His poorly thought out and rash decisions have proven disastrous to the economy. Well, Elias, how do we know that? I mean, let me just play devil's advocate for a moment because—
And defend Trump?
Yeah, I don't want to do that. That puts me in a bad spot. But the fact of the matter is to say that the economy is disastrous is kind of difficult because there are a lot of people who don't believe that. A lot of people think the economy is doing extremely well.
Well, the jury is out. I mean, if you listen to certain economists, most economists, we're heading in an unfavorable trajectory because we're getting into the $1.5 trillion
debt.
Debt. And that's going to limit how much we can spend on infrastructure and other programs, and it's going to hurt in the long run. But right now, the economy is humming along, according to economists.
Not only that, as Arlo would say, not only that, there's a consistent discussion about the Great Depression that is coming or the Great Recession that is coming. Now, by a lot of economists, and sooner or later, they're going to be right.
Well, and what goes up must come down.
That's right.
And also, Trump is making drastic changes to the economy, and he's going to be judged by those in 2020. You saw when the GM plant got shut down, that's 14,000 people in Ohio and Michigan.
Job,
that
yeah.
that can't help. And those are what you would think blue-collar Trump voters. That is his base. And so what happens in the economy between now and November 2020? He is going to be judged by that. And if things go well, I think he has it'll be favorable for him. And if things don't, he could have a very embarrassing big loss in 2020.
Well, don't you think that the state of the economy in later 2019 will define whether he declares that he's done the job and he's going to leave office or that he's going to seek a second term? I mean, won't that be a factor? If things are so bad against him, he may just
let's not forget.
Well, I don't say that.
Robert Mueller.
You don't think so?
Let's not forget.
Oh, something might happen in between that.
Bruce Springsteen, of all people, was quoted in the paper yesterday.
Yeah, I was surprised.
Saying that he thought that that Trump would get another term. And now there's a voice of reason.
Well, I think, his argument was a good one, which is to say that you have a lot of people who are angry, and if he is able... His argument was he seems to be, meaning the president. Yeah. That Springsteen's argument was that the president is able to whip up that fury among his base and others to stoke that fury better than the Democrats, who he called leaderless at this point, which it's hard to argue with him on that point, to say, okay, that they are more equipped to whip up an opposition to this president.
Far be it from me, an admirer of Springsteen, who is, of course, an admirer of Pete, which leads me to be an admirer of Springsteen, is that I just think he's dead wrong. I think this president cannot win another term, no matter what.
Well, I think that perhaps he might be a clever goading of the Democrats to get their act together, and that's why
Well,
you say
I think that's
like
exactly
that.
What he's saying.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah, that's right.
All right.
Oh, there's another one? You want another one or not?
I want enough to fill 1 minute and 40 seconds.
Okay, then I'll read this very slow.
No. You don't have to.
Okay, here we go.
How many you got there? Two?
One.
Oh, all right, that's fine.
Good morning, says Vicky.
Good morning.
Good morning, and thank you to all of you.
You're welcome.
George Conway disrespecting his wife? Eric Trump asserts that Conway's post of the legal citation appropriate to charge Donald Trump with witness tampering after yesterday's tweet storm is disrespectful of Kellyanne. Since George and Kellyanne appear to still be together after months of Conway's public criticism of the president, the more obvious point is that Kellyanne, and this is in capital letters, knows, KNOWS, and there's a big explanation point. George Conway has emerged in the colorful DC cast of characters as something of an anti-hero. It is endlessly fascinating to me to see where and when he will show up. It really is fascinating. I think that the fact that here is this woman, she is a major spokesman, her husband, a conservative lawyer of some note, goes ahead and is really one of the greatest Trump critics. And how is that going to work out? What happens at night? I just saw Adam's Rib on Channel 58.
Oh, wow.
Adam's Rib.
What a great movie.
Well, you know what it reminds me of? The Conways. They remind me of James Carville and Mary Madeline. Yeah, who was an aide to President George Herbert Walker Bush.
Yeah.
And Carville was a devout Democrat, a pretty clever, sharp tongue, and they'd go on TV together and kind of be point-counterpoint. And as far as I know, they're still together.
Isn't there a difference in defending George Herbert Walker Bush and defending Donald Trump?
Well, Joe, there's a difference in everything.
That's profound.
Is that profound? There's a difference. On the other hand, it was an act. The two of them had a great act going.
Sure.
In this case, I don't think this is an act.
I mean, the other thing that was different about them, they both had the same position in different campaigns. I mean, that was what's so fascinating about that dynamic, where this is much different, where you have someone who's within the administration and someone who's just outside.
I agree with Alan that it is a different situation. They seem to exploit this contrast, the Matlin Carville. I'm talking about.
You got like three books out of that.
Yeah, I mean, they really exploited it. They'd be on TV together, and they became known for it. Conway, the Conways, you know, Kellyanne Conway, being such a devout and forceful defendant of the president, and then her husband publicly excoriating the president, going to Twitter to do it. You have to wonder what the breakfast table is like.
I think it's uncomfortable to watch him. He's not a pundit like James Carville was. He doesn't have a position in the Democratic Party. He's just criticizing his wife's boss, and I think also saying, you know, his wife's boss is criminal. I think it's uncomfortable to watch this dynamic. And she also isn't just any person within the White House. She is, many people would say, the Donald Trump defender till the end.
She's absolutely one of the reasons he was elected.
To which I say,
Look, you can't make a comparison between Carville and Matlin and these two. Okay, first of all, the Conways are both Republicans. That's number one. And as you said, the husband is a lawyer, and he's not Jim Carville. He's not a political operative. He's not a campaign manager. He's not as colorful and all the rest of that sort of stuff. You know, there's a part of me that thinks that Kellyanne knows she's lying through her teeth and knows exactly what George is going to do every day and is thankful for him to do it.
That will come out someday, perhaps.
Yes. So what's the
we'll
pillow
all be
talk?
Fascinated.
Yeah, the pillow
what's
talk.
What's the pillow talk all about?
Yeah.
Among
right.
the
great job,
like,
George.
Oh, honey,
the
I can't
perfect.
Stand it anymore, but, you know, I have
say.
To save face, so you need to do this for me. You know, I mean, can you imagine the hell that would have to be paid if he was doing this and she did not know?
To which I say,
Right.
I think that's a great place to pause. We will we'll be back. We'll continue after we contemplate. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, J.P. Miller, and Libby Post. We have a new batch of letters. We'll go to those, and then we'll move on to new topics.
I didn't even see them there. I'm glad you told me.
No problem.
Christine, China and trade. I disagree with parts of the discussion on decades of weak U.S. trade policy with China. Hasn't trade policy been a boom for consumers? Walmart and Amazon, who are buying cheaper goods from China? Just a comment. That's from Christine.
Well, it certainly has been good for Walmart and for Amazon.
It's been good for other people like American workers.
It's been good for Trump because a lot of his product comes from China.
Right. The shirts, the
ties.
The
shirts, all that stuff.
And his daughter's stuff.
Yeah. And she, how many patents or whatever trademarks have she gotten out of China since all
And was
all
that
of
not bribery
started?
Of some kind?
Yeah.
Either legal or illegal?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Steven says, trade talks. I predict that whatever happens, Stable Genius will declare a tremendous victory. Well, that's a good prediction. There's
you know,
a safe
it's all
one.
About how you paint it. You
yeah.
know?
And Keith said, Trump's number one issue was not China. My recollection of Trump's 2016 campaign was that his number one issue was he's going to build the wall and that Mexico is going to pay for it. His second issue was Hillary's emails, and a distant third was China and U.S. trade policy.
And health care was in there, too. He was going to give us a better health care program,
Obamacare.
Less expensive. And
every American was going to have it good.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Chicken in every pot.
And Keith continues. He is not getting his wall. His daughter ran her own private email server, and his China trade policy is a disaster. I disagree with JP about Trump's number one campaign policy was China. All right. And then
depends on the day of the week.
And then Ben said, wage protection for American workers. We need to protect our workers in any trade agreements. Likewise, improve the working conditions of those countries we trade with. We need to accept higher prices on our purchases of foreign commodities. And that's from Ben.
All right.
Moving right on. John, our regular correspondent, says, if President Trump had been lying about the deal, benefits. Can the panel explain why China has been totally silent when Trump and Kudlow detailed the immediate benefits of the 90-day extension? Some might argue the silence is a face-saving exercise by China. Also, Trump's approval poll numbers are still steady and all in the mid-40s. Not sure what Alan is referring to regarding that. Are you kidding? The guy is over 60% negative rating in this in all of the polls. 40% is terrible.
He
hasn't gotten over that.
Right.
That's what I'm talking about, John. But thanks for your usual letter. Thank you. Appreciate it. And then we'll go to Steve, who says, Trump, everybody knows Trump is out of his element. The question is, can Congress get him to do anything effectively? I lay 90% of the blame on congressional Republicans for not finding a way to get Trump and his minions to come around. Thoughts, please? Well, we've been giving.
Well, I wonder in the new year if the Republicans who control the Senate and some of the Republicans in the House will change their tactic as they look at 2020 coming along and try to distance themselves from some of the negativism that has come from the Trump administration and the policies that he's had, so that they're not brought down by it, because I think the midterm election was a wake-up call for them.
Well, but it's gonna happen. But here's their dilemma, right? We know that the standard dilemma that we've all talked about. There's always a primary opponent that will say you betrayed Trump and therefore you deserve to die politically. Okay, so there's that. But let's assume that a Republican now turns around and starts to go the other way and starts to say, all right, this is too much. I can't stand it. We've reached that point. Now, will the Democratic independent voters reward that person? That is the key question. And I sort of would love to ask JP on that one, because JP has shown some signs of being, you know,
politically astute.
Both foot over the line. So feet over the line. So what's the answer to that question?
I was very surprised by Senator Barrasso this week on Meet the Press going full-fledged defense of Trump on the Mueller stuff. And Republicans are going to, if they want to win, they got to stick with Trump because that's their guy. They have no other place to go. You saw Trump where he campaigned for people and they went heavy for Trump. They did better than the ones that were a little wishy-washy on.
Okay, so let me turn that around for a moment. I interviewed Antonio Delgado yesterday, very impressive and all. Let me ask you a question about John Faso. Had John Faso really let Trump have it in blue state New York, would he still be the congressman? Libby is, let the record show, Libby is nodding her head vigorously.
Which worked so well on the radio.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, sorry.
Well, if the video is working, it would.
I think if he had reflected his constituency more and rebuked Trump, I think he might have been able to pull it out. That's his fault. The thing is that, you know, not everybody won who Trump went to stump for, you know, and so it's, you know, yes, the woman in Mississippi won, but there were other ones that didn't.
Right? And he knew and what that he was doing. Right. He wanted to go to the places where he would win. Yeah.
But, right. But the other part of this is that, you know, you talk about what are the Republicans going to do now? The Republicans who couldn't stand Trump and what he was doing left. They all retired. So there's not going to be any. It'll be very interesting to see if there's going to be any backbone left, because you have many of the seasoned senators and congressmen, they retired because they didn't want to be part of this.
Now, Libby, I think you underestimate the fact that many of these politicians have been practicing the world's two oldest professions for a long time.
Prostitution and what else?
And politics.
Okay. The two pieces.
And they will go where they need to go in order to survive. Now, remember Watergate. Watergate became an absolute wipeout. But, you know, you can always depend on the Democrats to screw it up. And they did. And so, you know, both houses of Congress and the presidency and the Supreme Court are now in the hands of the Republicans. If you had gone back to Watergate, I don't know that you could have envisioned this.
Well, when it comes back to John Faso, Congressman Faso's reelection, he did not embrace President Trump. I think what caught up to him.
No, he didn't warmly embrace him.
I think what caught up to him was his vote on health care, which was exploited by his Democratic opponent. And also, going negative, I think, backfired on him when he went after Antonio Delgado for his rap music back, you know, 20 years ago or whenever it was.
I disagree. I think he had to take a much more forceful anti-Trump position when that moment came, and he might have won.
I don't disagree with Libby and Alan. That would have been a tact for him to take, which is I'm the Republican that's going to stand up to Trump.
Yeah, would have.
I'm going to be the voice. Yeah. That would have been a good tact. Some also may make the case that if he had fully embraced Trump and driven turnout among Republicans, then he could have maybe done better. That's another strategy.
But there weren't enough of them.
There was a great deal of independence in the
The independents weren't going to go.
But the Democrats and Republicans are about even in that district.
And the other thing is that he would have had to do a total 360 on his campaign 2 years ago.
I think you're right. We have to end this long national
nightmare of Obama. Mm-hmm. Once he started saying that over and over and over again, I knew that he had lost his moral compass. He had lost his center, because that's not who he is.
That's
but
not who it is.
Let me ask
John,
you this.
If that's what he turned into, because he wanted to be elected. And now he might be the new Republican state chair.
I don't think so.
All right. Let's take a break. When we come back, we will continue this conversation. We have more letters. We have much more. We have many more topics to discuss. But first, news with Ray Graff. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning, listening to Soweto Gospel Choir, Songs of the Free, in honor of Nelson Mandela's 100th birthday. They are at Troy Savings Bank Music Hall on Thursday night, 7:30, troymusichall.org. All right. By the way, we have a complete playlist. If you want to find out more, go to WAMC.org/roundtable, and the complete playlist is there, and you can find out individual tracks that we've been playing this morning. Let's get back to it. We have Alan Chartok here, Mike Spain, JP Miller, and Libby Post making up our panel. We have a lot of letters. We'll go to those.
All right. So here comes Lawrence's letter, who says, "While I would love to agree with Alan about the chances of Donald Trump's possibilities for re-election, it is absolutely astonishing how many pundits, Democrats, and liberals haven't had a clue that Trump could be elected in the first place. Showing how out of touch most people were with what was going on, do not be deceived or complacent. It could very well happen again. I'm not taking my cues from Bruce Springsteen, rather stating what should be obvious." Well, I'd like to answer that letter, if I may. A lot of pundits got it wrong, but I did not. So I said he'd win, and I say he will lose bad the next time, if he's even around.
If he's around.
Yeah.
That's the issue. If he's around, and if it's Pence, he's definitely going down.
If what?
If it's Pence running for president, Pence will not get elected.
Well,
president.
I'm not talking about Pence. I'm talking about Trump. If Trump runs, Trump loses.
Well, that's interesting. It's a thread we could talk about whether Mike Pence would be a good candidate in 2020. It depends on who the Democrats come
terrible.
Up with.
He'd be terrible. Yeah. Well, as of this morning, by the way, just to give you a little bit of an inside thing on who's saying what. Here's the people we have heard from who are saying they might do it. With a big emphasis, Joe Biden, as of last night, Joe Biden big time, says he might do it. Hillary Clinton has said she's interested in it. Bernie Sanders just let loose with one and said he's interested in doing it too. And then you have a whole host of other people. But there are some.
You're forgetting the one who's likely to win.
Who's that?
Mike Bloomberg.
Oh, yeah, Mike Bloomberg. You know, that's right.
Yeah, what's the median age on that list of four people?
And Elizabeth Warren.
Yeah, well, she brings down the median age a bit.
A little bit.
Yeah. Okay. Acosta scandal, says Bob from Albany. Please spend a few moments discussing Trump's Secretary of Labor going easy on sexual predator Jeffrey Epstein when Secretary Acosta was a federal prosecutor, this really stinks.
Well, Jeffrey Epstein is a pedophile. And there were a number of cases. And, you know, Trump has been caught up in his stuff. Some other people have been caught up in his stuff. And he keeps not skirting jail. He keeps not getting thrown in jail because of the amount of money he makes for people.
Well, not only that, but as Bob from Albany says, it really stinks. Yes, it does. But we see that the thing about Acosta when he was federal prosecutor is that he has stepped up and is basically defending what he did at the time.
It's
that's
horrible.
What's so terrible.
Does he have to be approved by the U.S. Senate?
Secretary?
Yeah.
I think so.
I can't imagine this guy's going to be approved by the U.S. Senate. I think he's going to have to step down. I can't believe the U.S. Senate would approve him.
And we've heard from Fred, Money and Millennials. Great panel discussion this AM. I'm glad you were talking about where the tax money comes and goes from in present times. I feel you need to add deeper discussions presenting the newest generations, how this applies to them. Can you reach out and speak to them? Fred. Hey, you young people. I'm reaching out. Okay, here we go. Rich says, stick with Trump. The hardcore red state Republicans will stick with Trump, as did 30% of the population stuck with Nixon. Rich from Amherst. Well, yes, that's true. And Nixon did win after Watergate. Let's remember that.
After Watergate break-in.
Yeah.
Right, but before everything came out.
Well, that's not true. Woodward and Bernstein had written those stories about the cover-up, and it didn't really get any traction until in 1973. Yeah.
And there are still a lot of Republicans in this country who think that Nixon was screwed.
And you also had McGovern and Thomas Eagleton and
Sergeant Schreiber.
I mean, it was a debacle on the Democrat side. It's one of those things, if, you know, just wait and the Democrats will screw up. So,
Okay. So we read Rich's letter. That was very good, Rich. Thank you for that. Mm-hmm. And Martina says, Faso. He also ignored his constituents by not holding town meetings. That made people angry. And that's from Martina. And then we heard from Virginia. I watched much of the ceremonies to President Bush on Monday. There were many servicemen, but there was a noticeable lack of women among them. We are told that women are an integral part of our armed services, but where were they yesterday? Virginia. All right. And then Scott says, unbelievable. Going to definitively mark my calendar for the state when Alan said there is no way that Trump can be reelected. How much of a bubble are you guys in? Scott, you write it right down right now. And I'm going to write down on mine that Scott wrote me a nasty letter and said I was wrong. Okay. Anybody got a pen? Okay. And then Susan says reelection.
We have a tape.
Yeah. Susan said reelection. I'm surprised to keep hearing talk about Trump running for reelection when the noose is tightening around his lying, cheating neck. He is closer than ever to being indicted on several charges. He won't be able to run. Ladies and gentlemen, I don't know that even Bob Mueller has decided you can indict a sitting president.
Well, there's some people in Israel who think that you can indict the prime minister.
Prime minister.
Can and have, by the way.
Yeah.
And can and have in the past.
Right. Couldn't have happened to a nicer guy.
All right, let's go to other stuff and move on to some topics that we have in our final 10 minutes. So there are a couple stories I want. Obviously, the Bush funeral will be tomorrow for President Bush. There is that'll be the Washington, the day of mourning. I was surprised, and I will admit, maybe I have forgotten this since the last presidential passing of I believe Ronald Reagan was our last president.
12 years ago.
But did we not get mail delivery on that day?
Oh, yes, we did.
So how did that happen?
That was a surprise to me, too, that Wednesday will be an official day off for most federal workers. I saw a piece in the Washington Post that was trying to advise, and it's ambiguous, about who gets to get the day off and who doesn't, and it depends on what level job you have. But postal delivery will be suspended.
I know when they said National Day of Mourning, like, I got that. But then that part about everything's going to be shut down, I was like,
This is about the fact that Trump is not eulogizing Bush. And in order for him to still be in the middle of all of this, he did this to declare this a National Day of Mourning.
You mean not eulogizing him at the funeral?
At the funeral. Okay, okay. They didn't, you know, I don't think the family even wants him there, but, you know, it's going to
well,
be
Well, but judge on what Barbara's wishes were
right.
when she died,
That's
that would
right.
be true.
Right. Yeah. And so I think that this is just one more way of Trump making sure that he's in the middle of this because his ego has to be there. That's all. That's what this is.
Are you waiting for something in the mail?
I think, like, a lot of people around the holidays are waiting for a lot of stuff in the mail. I have no problem with it. I just thought, okay, maybe I do have a problem with it, but I just thought it was odd. I didn't know that was a thing. And as I started to look back at previous presidents and their passing, that had not been part of it, and I just thought that was an interesting thing, especially given the president's past comments about the Postal Service. And the Bushes.
And a thousand points of light. And
I agree
Jeb
with you.
Bush.
Postal carriers right now are beleaguered with piles of stuff. They are delivering stuff morning, noon, and night. And I feel like giving them a day off, it's like they're just going to have a bigger pile the next day in the holidays. It's almost negative.
But this is all about Trump putting himself in the middle of this and making sure he gets his name.
But he's screwing the American people, as Joe and JP is suggesting.
But what else is new?
I mean, this was a guy who had to take 2 days of torture. Wrong metaphor. Had to take 2 days of constant criticism to put flags at half staff over
John McCain.
And now another political enemy, if you will. It just seems odd to me. That's all.
Well, I think, though, that he's either taking some advice or he's suddenly has seen the opportunity
Mike, I'm going to interrupt you just for a second to say, and I don't want that to any way be interpreted, that I don't think that the former president should be honored. He should, and I believe there should be a day of mourning.
Fair enough.
Just questioning as to that being included in it, and I didn't know there was a precedent for that. That's what I was.
I know when JFK died, there was certainly, the nation fell to its knees. I mean, it was a different situation.
I think Trump has probably known, as we all have for a while, that President Bush was relatively near death.
Well, he's 94 and ailing.
And I think that hopefully his family and his advisors said, the way that you handle this is really important. Don't tweet stupid stuff. Have a nice statement. Don't make this all about you. I think that they felt it was his reaction during the McCain funeral was horrible for him. And the whole McCain thing was all about how Trump is reacting to McCain, where he's taking a little bit more of a back seat here. And I feel like it's benefiting the country because everybody in the country is getting to honor this great man that passed and was our president.
Well, that was a little different in that McCain had made it quite clear. He wanted nothing. He did not want Trump at the funeral and all the rest. But I just want to have an opportunity to quote my mom, who used to quote other people by saying, this is a clear example of, England giving away France's colonies. Mm-hmm. In other words, the American people, the ones who are going to suffer, not him.
Well, it was clear that President Bush and President George Herbert Walker Bush and President George W. Bush, for that matter, did not have a warm relationship with President Trump. In fact, the late President Bush said that he voted for Hillary Clinton in the last election, which I think, if that doesn't say
that
volumes, I don't know what does. But it is.
I wish we could give my favorite George W. Bush quote about the president after the inaugural.
But we're on the radio.
But we're on the radio, and
I
won't.
Understand. But it should. I think President Trump has shown that he has grown. He learned from the McCain debacle that he should do nothing but say some respectful things and stay in the background.
That seems generous, Mike.
Really generous.
But it's remarkable. I don't think I've ever seen him grow.
It's very remarkable.
All right. I don't know. We may give you growth. I'm not sure.
And if you read President Trump's statement on the passing of President Bush, you can tell that he did not write a single sentence of that statement.
No,
of course not. Of course not.
But it was a beautiful statement. Yeah. It was a beautiful statement.
We just were waiting for the tweet that was going to
sort of upend it all.
Right.
Right.
It hasn't happened yet.
Not yet.
Fingers crossed.
No, wait until tomorrow, after it's all over.
And so, but that, and it obviously makes a lot of sense that, you know, people are making what it's traditional that the current president eulogizes the former president. But obviously, in this case, when your son is a former president, that it makes
well,
the most
sense. Nixon didn't eulogize Harry Truman. They had odds. They were at odds. And when Harry Truman died, Nixon kind of just grumpily didn't do much. So
I want to read a letter, if I may. I have Wednesday off, says postal worker.
Here, if you want to read it on paper, there it is.
Yeah, okay.
All right, you got it there.
I have Wednesday also. I had a day off for Reagan and Ford, said the postal worker. I also had a day off for Reagan and Ford. I think you may be misremembering getting mail delivered 12 and 14 years ago. No, I remember the letter. No, I'm just kidding. There will be no mail delivered tomorrow, but people working behind the scenes will be at work. The part-time employees will be sorting packages and will actually be doing some package delivery. And JP is right, two explanation points. The post office is slammed with work right now, and every carrier I know is annoyed that they have tomorrow off. And they are not looking forward to doing double work on Thursday.
Well, if it's true that
no
postal
stock
workers,
market either, we should
right? know. Oh, is that right?
Yes.
Okay. Well, if it's a past precedent to give the postal workers the day off when a president passes away, then if Trump had not done that, we'd be sitting here berating him for that small move or something. So it's a no-win situation.
All right, I'm looking this up as we speak. I'm not.
You're questioning our writer.
No, I'm not. I'm just fascinated because I thought I had heard the opposite. Okay. But the agency has closed or suspended operations at least seven times to mourn presidents, including John F. Kennedy in November 1963, Dwight Eisenhower in March 69, Harry Truman in December 1972, Lyndon Johnson in January 1973, Richard Nixon in April 1994, and Ronald Reagan in 2004, June of 2004. And Gerald Ford was the last president who passed in 2007. So we stand corrected. So that is a precedent. That was basically what I was starting off with.
Thank you, Scott.
And as Sonia writes to us, as someone who made phone calls pre-primaries 2016 to Iowa and New Hampshire, I can tell you that the American people I talked to were torn between Sanders and Trump, the light and the dark sides of the force. They were angry with establishment politicians who were not going to vote for one. I so far see no reason those independent voters would change their tune. The Trump supporters I talk to still support him, and the progressive Democrats won't vote for a party that rigs primaries. If that history repeats itself, so will the results, and that's from Sonia. I don't agree with her.
I think
Trump's numbers are now so despicably low that he can't ever climb out of this.
Should he survive Mueller? Will he run for re-election, Alan?
Well, I think if you have the kind of ego narcissism issues that this guy has, he probably will.
Well, he's already got an infrastructure up and running.
And he won the last time. Mm-hmm. So when somebody has a success, they tend to think that they can always replicate that success. He won't win.
All right.
Write it down on your calendar.
We're out of time. Which I'm sad because I wanted to talk about the North Carolina election fraud story.
We'll talk tomorrow.
Do we have 2 minutes? Okay.
I also want.
So the North Carolina election fraud investigation centers on an operative with criminal history who worked for the GOP congressional candidate. And now the investigation is going in to what happened a week after the midterms. An election fraud investigation in the 9th district is focusing on an operative who worked for the GOP candidate.
And so it's already been decided. So now the question is, will he be seated?
Right. And will they do a recall and do a new election? And, you know, this makes what used to go on with absentee ballots in Albany County look like child's play. I mean, this is what this guy has orchestrated with taking people's ballots illegally has totally impacted this campaign. And you wonder what kind of impact it had on the gubernatorial race as well.
Yeah, and it raises the whole issue of whether, you know, we're all calling for election ballot reform and to make it easier for people to vote by mail, et cetera, et cetera. It's also easier to manipulate mm-hmm. the absentee ballot. So safeguards have to be developed. And if this isn't a clarion call for that, I don't know what it is.
And to be clear, in some states, what this guy did was legal.
That's right. That's right. That's amazing.
In other words, picking up people's absentee ballots for them.
Right. And advising them how to check
how
off.
How to do it and what to do. And just put your name
the
in.
The helpful candidate.
Yeah.
Right. You know, I have an absentee ballot here. Could you please sign it? I fill it out for you.
Right. I mean, you know, the other thing that's going on, which is sort of tandem to this, is the Republican legislatures in Michigan and Wisconsin are trying to change change their state constitutions to make it so that the new Democratic governors and attorney generals can't do their job.
That happened
in North Carolina,
backfire.
Too.
Yeah,
right?
It happened in North Carolina.
Right. Yeah. All right, let's take a, we're out of time. Yeah. Thanks to everybody, and we'll be back.